At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com. The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard-issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911 and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
You're listening to the Chasing Tales Outdoor Podcast, where when you can't be in the outdoors, we bring it to you. All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Chasing Tales Outdoor Podcast, where we have one singular goal, and that is to inspire you to get outside, do whatever it is you like to do outdoors. On this week's podcast, I'm Chase. I'm not joined by Walt this week. He had family obligations, so I took over. I get to speak with Mr. Ricky Bullard, straight-up deer slayer. We had him on the podcast earlier this year. There was a lot of people that really liked that podcast, so we decided to get him back on. We discuss a variety of things. We talk about his approach right now with the season lurking, what he does in-season scouting, trail cameras, and a variety of other topics. I think you guys are really going to enjoy this one. Before we get to that podcast, a couple little things. We got to thank the patrons of the show. You guys help make this podcast possible. I know we've had a bunch of new patrons. When Walter is back on next week, we'll do some of those Patreon shout-outs. So thanks again for everything you guys do. We also got to thank Spartan Forge. We're doing a podcast next week, should be dropping next week with Spartan Forge. Bill's going to come on and probably drop some bombs on that podcast. I think everybody's really going to be excited about that. I hope everybody is getting everything dialed in. I know there's already bucks falling in South Florida right now. Our season up here in Central Florida is lurking a little over a month away from that. I'm looking forward to that. So I hope everybody's getting out, shooting their bows, making sure those are dialed in, getting all their equipment ready, because hunting season will be here before you know it. So with all that said, let's get to the podcast with Ricky. All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Chasing Tales Outdoor Podcast. Today's guest has been one that is a fan favorite. He came on earlier this year, I believe, and talked about something that's not talked about a lot, which is buck bedding hunting in Florida. I have Mr. Ricky Bullard on the line with me. How are you doing, buddy?
Good, Chase. Doing good. How are you doing?
Good, man. Good. I understand you're coming off of a lot of work hours.
Yeah, unfortunately, it was complimentary, also known as mandatory. So,
right. Gotcha. Well, we have added kind of a new demographic of listeners to the podcast. It seems like here recently, a lot of Florida guys getting on. We've also added a lot of Florida patrons, and there were several of them that kind of mentioned your specific podcast that they really enjoyed. So I figured, hey, why not take this chance, get you back on the podcast, maybe get you to talk about some of your, what you're doing now, right before the season, kind of your in-season approach, trail cameras, things like that. But before we dive into that, I know some people have already listened to your other episode, but we have new listeners that may not know who you are. So why don't you just give us a quick snapshot of who Ricky Bullard is and your hunting.
Okay. Yeah. So 32 years old, turned 33 this year, but I'm a North Florida native, so I've been hunting North Florida, South Georgia my whole life. Well, since I was about 16, kind of self-taught, had a few people, my family that I knew that hunted, but mostly private land guys. So I just picked up, you know, whatever knowledge I could glean from TV shows and people I know here and there that hunted. But really started getting into the public land thing and learning the hard way. I hunted private land all throughout the years up until the last probably 4 or 5. I started transitioning pretty much all public. But yeah, just learned everything the hard way. So I've tried just about everything there is. And finally, in the last few years, I'm starting to kind of grow into the style that I like. And yeah, that's about it. I've got have 5 kids, and I've actually moved. I don't live up against the state line anymore. I live a little further south, just southwest of Jacksonville, but busy, work, kids, and I try to get out in the woods in between as much as I can.
Right. Well, you mentioned while we were on the phone prior to starting the podcast, you mentioned you were starting to learn some new WMAs kind of in your area. Why don't you kind of talk about like your approach to when you find a new WMA you're going to hunt? What kind of approach do you have for that WMA? And then how do you go about it? Like say right now, if you found a new WMA you wanted to hunt, what would you do?
Okay. I use Onyx like pretty much everybody nowadays. So I'll get on there and I'll note the property boundaries and all that. And I'll do the map scout as much as I can ahead of time. Just kind of identify like what's going to be the positive and negative areas, like where I think deer are not going to be and where they are going to be, what's worth hunting. And I just kind of locate what I think are the good areas for that spot, regardless of where I think people are going to be. I'll locate all the really good looking areas, and then I try to locate the hard to get to areas. And I know more and more people are, you know, getting way back away from the parking areas and off the road. So it's making things more difficult, but you know, that still cuts out a lot of the competition. I mean, it is what it is. It's tough here in Florida, water, heat, mosquitoes. It keeps a lot of people from getting too far from the truck, regardless of what they say. So,
right.
So yeah. And then I'll go to the place and I'll drive around it as much as I can, try to, you know, like, okay, these are the roads that are closed to driving down. I try to mark all those the best I can on Onyx. So when I'm looking at it later, I can be like, okay, this spot looks good. Okay. Oh yeah. It's also a 1.5-mile walk from the nearest parking. So that makes it even more appealing to me. And, yeah. And then when I get there, once I drive around and see everything I can see from the truck, I'll, go to the good areas and see if they're as good as I think they are. And, you know, I try to find some food sources, stuff like that. Just kind of general things that I'm sure everybody looks for, but also looking for people pressure. Is everybody else accessing these easy, good looking spots? And if so, then I move on to the harder to get to areas. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of my general starting point. And then once I get in there, I kind of see the terrain. Do I think, you know, they're bedding? Kind of pick out, are they bedding? They got big patches of gallberries or palmettos, or kind of what the deal is for that specific property, and then kind of build on it from there. And it's, you know, some places you can get a good feel for in a year, and some places it takes, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 or plus years or a lifetime. And, you know, there's always something to learn, unless it's a really small piece of property. But
right. Well, how many hours do you think you spend like scouting a piece of public before you actually hunt it?
A lot. So that's one thing people used to, some of my friends used to make fun of me for, because I would scout quota WMAs before I even got drawn for it. You know what I mean?
Right.
I'm better at in-season scouting now, and I kind of, I've been much more successful at that. But in the early days, you know, that's the only way to learn. You gotta get out there and you know, cliche, boots on the ground, but it is what it is. You gotta walk. That's how you learn. Identify food sources, what oaks are dropping, what times of the year. Are there any oaks that even have acorns there, or is it an off year? Stuff like that. But I'd say I'm probably making between a postseason scouting, and this isn't even counting map scouting. I don't even know how to track how many hours I've done that. Just sitting at work, you know, have a free moment, get on, look at Onyx,
right,
and try to drop some waypoints. But I don't know. I'll probably make 10 full or half day trips at least a year to some of these spots. That's not including during the season. That's just like postseason and during the summer. I kind of quit bass fishing and anything else that takes time away from my family. That way I can scout as much as I can for deer and then also deer and turkey hunt as much as possible when it's open for hunting. So,
right. Now, when you're turkey hunting in these areas, do you use that time to scout for deer as well?
Oh yeah, for sure. I'm a pretty fanatical turkey hunter, but so that's the primary focus. But I mean, you better believe it. I got my phone in my hand and Onyx stays open as much as I can. So I'm marking stuff. I learned a lot this past season about WMA. Me and you were talking about before we started. There's no turkey. Could have been any turkeys there, but
right.
I found a lot of deer sign when I was trying to turkey hunt. It just kind of turned into a scouting mission. But yeah, it kind of gives you the full picture, especially that post season scouting, because you're seeing, you know, okay, this scrape looks awesome. Is there a climber mark? Is there climber marks on a tree nearby, or is did nobody else find this? Or you know, oak hammock. You know, tore up with sign and rubs where they've been feeding during the season. Did anybody else hunt it, or did they leave it alone? And that's another thing I should mention. I kind of started the food, and then I try to figure out, okay, this is where the deer are feeding. Where do I think they're bedding? And then that's where my focus moves to from the food is, you know, my primary goal is to get as close as I can into that bedding. And sometimes it's in close proximity to the food, and sometimes it's, you know, they might not even be feeding on the public. You're just trying to identify what they're eating when they cross onto the private. But yeah, turkey season is great for that.
Right. Well, what does your Onyx look like? Like what things are you marking on your Onyx while you're out scouting?
Like I mentioned before, I'll go through right off the bat and I'll mark all the gates and the non-drivable roads. So later I can, you know, take note of that. But I mean, I'm marking, if I find a scrape, I'm marking every scrape I find, even if it's somewhere I'm not going to hunt, because later I can look at the big picture and be like, okay, this is a very obvious scrape line coming down this transition. And it seems like when you're doing it and you're there, you're like, okay, this is pretty obvious, but later you forget about everything you're seeing. So even if it takes me a few extra minutes to find a scrape, if I find a rub line or a cluster of rubs, it looks like it was a bed that a buck used during the season, even if it's just a rut bed, if there's historical rubs there, you know, that's something to take note of, because I've recently started trying to do like long soaks on camera. So that's a perfect spot for throwing up a camera, and you might not have pictures for 3 months. And then when the rut starts, you might have a buck or a different buck in there every day using that bed area, you know, while there's a hot doe in there, and then they're gone. But then the next year you can be like, okay, this 5-10 day window, you know, there's bucks using this area, stuff like that. So yeah, just take your time while you're there. If it looks like somewhere that you can capitalize, you can actually hunt, whether it be scrapes or food or a bedding area, whatever, I take the time to actually type something up, maybe take a picture like, okay, this is what's going on here. There's a scrape up against this creek, and these are the winds I can hunt it on, and I need my climber, or I need, this is only a saddle spot or only a lock-on spot and stuff like that, because you will not remember.
Right.
if you're doing full day scouts, and a lot of them, you're going to forget about stuff even if it looks killer. So
right now with wind direction, you kind of mentioned wind direction and putting that in there now, because you're a lot of your stuff, you're trying to get close to bedding and things like that. So it would be more beneficial for sure to know what the wind direction is. I know obviously there's certain places where the wind kind of has to be perfect where you're mm-hmm. going to hunt an area. But it seems like in Florida, you could be getting winds from every direction on a
oh,
hunt.
Yeah.
So are there just times where you just go, I'm going to hunt this area no matter what the wind direction is, just because if I don't, I'm not going to hunt this area at all this season?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's all relative to your situation. You know, if you have a ton of time, yeah, you know, wait, try to wait for the appropriate wind and all that, but just being real, sometimes it's not going to happen.
Right.
You know, the wind swirls and, you know, you might be sitting next to a creek and there's no wind and your thermals are pulling down to that. And sometimes you just got to get in there and hunt. But if it's somewhere or like, okay, I know for a fact there's bucks using this area or a buck or deer, whatever, using this bedding area, and I need this certain wind, I will try to make sure that it's a fairly windy day. The wind is, you know, is right for that spot. But if it switches while I'm there or something happens and I've only got a certain amount of time to hunt, I'm going to get in there and do it. I've killed a lot of deer doing that and the wind switching and be like, oh, I should probably get down and move. But, you know, I've only got 3 days on this quota or whatever the situation is. And by the time you get down and move and, you know, you either try to find a spot in the blind or go somewhere a mile away, you just, I'm taking my chances. And a lot of times it works out. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes you have the right wind and they come in from a direction you're not suspecting and they bust you. So.
Oh yeah. That seems to be one of the things that I've dealt with in the past, thinking I had the perfect wind and then here comes the deer coming from a direction that I completely kind of eliminated thinking the deer would come from. And here they come and wham, your wind, they get it to about that 20 yard mark where you're thinking you're fixing to draw back. And then they finally pick up your scent and gone forever. But yeah, I know some people completely like are really wind guys that like they focus on the wind no matter what. That's what they're going to do. And then some that just don't even factor it in at all. Like they're just like, the wind's going to do what it's going to do. Deer could come from anywhere. I know this area. I'm going to hunt this area. And both are seem to be successful. So
yeah.
I don't know that there's like a right or wrong answer, but I do think if you're keeping the wind in your favor the best you can, your odds are going to be higher.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think in flat land down here, it's just about impossible to hunt the wind perfectly every time, but I think it's right. Something that you should absolutely be mindful of, but and do the best you can with it. But sometimes if it's the situation's right, you got to get in there and hunt.
Oh yeah. Yeah. In some of these areas, it seems like access can be issues to where you're like, well, my access is not going to be great because of this. And there's really no other way to access the piece, whatever. Maybe it butts up to some private or whatever. And I'm just kind of like, oh, well, if I'm going to hunt here, I've got to hunt here at some point. I can't wait the whole season to wait for a perfect wind. Because like you mentioned, sometimes there's areas where there could be a 5-day window of when it's going to be really good. And you got it. If you don't get in there, then you're like, well, that spot's kind of done for the season if I don't get in there. But that's one of the good thing, one of the good things about being mobile and saddled. Like you don't have to have a certain tree that you're going to hunt. You can always kind of adjust your setup when you're going in, taking your sticks and your sat, like I do on all my public land hunts. Is pretty much just run and gun, I guess, basically. I'm bringing all my stuff in and setting up that day. So I try to find like multiple trees or something in an area when I go in scouting to be like, all right, this tree would be good for like this particular wind. Or if I don't really have that wind, then I can hunt like 50 yards this way. And that's me just assuming that the deer are going to do what they've been doing. But,
yeah. So. That's the non-glamorous part about trying to bed hunt that a lot of people don't mention is you might find the bed and know exactly what, you know, you understand the situation perfectly, but there's a reason the deer are bedding there. They feel safe, whether they can hear you coming through water or noisy palmettos or whatever the situation is. You know, they're not bedding there by accident. And sometimes it's just you either got to go in the middle of the night and hope for the best that you can get up in there and before they do, or
you just gotta
gamble and try to get in there. But there's a lot of times where you get in there and you bust them and I was like, well, that's it. Or you go in there and they don't bed there that day.
Right. Yeah, yeah, it's Florida deer for you.
Yeah,
you can bet anywhere, and I've tried the bed hunting thing, and it's not that I'm gonna give up on it or anything. It's just like a lot of the beds and stuff that I find is I'm like, how do I get in here? Like, there's just no way to get that close without making noise, stepping on something. I'm really, a lot of the times it's just like, okay, well, it's going to take, and some of the guys that have mentioned bed hunting and stuff on the podcast before is like, they're going in like 2 or 3 hours before they need to be there. And talking about taking like going 100 yards in like an hour or something to try to get in these areas. And I just don't know if I'm that patient to be able to get. Now, if I knew there was a big, whatever, 130-inch Florida buck bedded there and there were good odds, then maybe I would take that chance of trying that. But I just haven't. It's just, I've always thought, I was like, oh, this is just a lot more difficult than most other styles.
Yeah. And it's exactly that. It's a style, and it's not just like anything else in deer hunting. There's nothing hard and fast about it. Everything's relative. But if it's not the most productive thing for the place I'm hunting, I'm not going to worry about hunting beds. It's just, I like it.
Right.
If you can identify them, and I really like windy days for trying to get close to a bed. Not last year, but 2 years ago, I killed 2 bucks like that. It was just, I couldn't believe it. It worked out perfect, but it's because it was like 20 plus mile an hour winds and I could get close.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, it just, if it's not going to be the most productive tactic, then do something else, you know, find a hot feed tree or whatever you got to do. It's just another tool.
Right. Now, do you think your postseason, preseason scouting helps you more, or you kind of mentioned that you're getting better at in-season scouting. So you must think, or have in the past, thinking that your preseason, postseason scouting is like helping you out more than maybe your in-season scouting.
It's because of, you know, kind of growing as a hunter, I guess. In the past, I didn't have any confidence if I didn't get in there beforehand. And, you know, in the early days, postseason scouting wasn't even on my radar. You know what I mean?
Right.
I was a young guy. It's like, okay, deer season's over. On to the next thing. But postseason scouting is huge. I really enjoy that. And it provides me a lot of information in the last 5 years since I really started hammering it. But I do like the pre and postseason scouting. I get a lot of information from it, and it helps build confidence. But as you kind of learn either areas or just general deer behavior and sign to look for and the right types of sign, right locations for it, you're going to be better at in-season scouting and trusting yourself. I mean, I can't tell you how many times in the past I've tried to in-season scout, like you do a hanging hunt, and I just never come across something that I'm like, man, this is where I need to hunt. Just don't have any confidence in identifying the sign. But the past 2 or 3 years, I'm getting better at it. And last year, that's primarily what I did. And it worked out. I killed 2 bucks like that. One Florida buck, one Georgia buck, but both of them were spots that I found that day or that week. And I was able to capitalize on it. But
okay. So what did you find when you got there? Like, what made you go, okay, I'm going to hunt here?
Well, the Florida buck, that was a quota hunt, and I had good bucks on camera. I actually got drawn for that place twice last year, and
oh wow,
twice? Yeah, I got twice. I had some preference points.
Okay,
but yeah, this is the place I knew I've hunted in the past, and the whole thing changed because the place got flooded. So the place where I knew deer were coming during archery, they weren't doing the same thing. So I'm like, man, I just got to get back in here. The deer have not left because there's some pretty prominent food sources nearby on private. So I was like, I got to find where they're bedding. I was hoping there was some dry ground back in the swamp. So I just kept walking and kept walking and kept walking. And I eventually started jumping deer, and the first deer I jumped was a nice buck. So I went up there and checked it out, and sure enough, it's a high spot. It was like, there's two rubs on it. I could see the perfect little bean shape where he was laying in the leaves, and you know, it was wet because he'd, you know, I guess get off and drink water throughout the day. But I went back the very next morning, got in there at like 4 o'clock in the morning, a couple hours before daylight, and caught him coming back to his bed. It wasn't the buck I saw the day before. It was a smaller buck, but there's only so many places to bed in that situation because of the water. So they were kind of just coming back to those little islands. And when I say islands, I'm talking like the biggest one might have been 10 by 20. They're all pretty small. And they were betting on them. So that was a kind of a unique situation, but I would have never known about it unless I just took off with my climber on my back and found, I was actually had my climber the day before and I was going to set it there, but I didn't want the deer to see it coming in. So I went back in with the saddle the next morning, but yeah, that ended up working out for me. And I ended up being a barely legal buck, not the big buck from the day before, but
right.
I killed bucks. So
yeah, yeah, exactly. In Florida, you can't be too picky. Especially on public land.
3 days to get it done. So
yeah, especially public land, a quota hunt, or it's a 3 day hunt. You're not going to be nowhere near as picky as a place that you might be hunting the whole season.
The Georgia hunt, that was a little bit different. It's you know, South Georgia, so it's not that much different than North Florida, but there was a certain feature that the deer were kind of going around. It was just basically an opening, and they didn't want to cross. They didn't want to walk through it, so they were walking around it, and I found it. I went and scouted it because I found it map scouting, and I got to the right where I was hoping they would be walking around it, and there was a trail intersection with some scrapes there, like fresh. And so I set up there and hunted it, and the first day I hunted it, I had some small bucks chasing does, so I just stayed there the whole day and ended up shooting a 10 point that afternoon, and I shot him standing at the scrape, but unfortunately it was a quartering two shot and buried in a shoulder, never found him, but I saw more bucks after I shot him.
Right.
And then went back 2 days later, even though I didn't want to, because we trailed that deer, you know, looking for him all night that night after I shot him. Came back 2 days later, killed a nice 8 point, still chasing those, that group of does around. So that's another thing. It may not be something that you can see while you're there. I saw the scrape, but I had no idea there's a hot doe in the area. But right. Once I knew that's what the deal was, you got to stay in that area until it changes, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Now, do you find any different? Is there, because you're hunting Florida and Georgia, I'm assuming they're not super far apart, but they might be. Is there a difference between Florida and Georgia hunting that you found?
As far as rut or general deer?
Like deer, stuff? Deer numbers, rut, any anything.
Well, yeah, I mean, there seems to be a little bit higher deer population in most of the places I hunt in Georgia, but as far as the kind of when they rut and stuff like that, it's pretty close to North Florida where I'm at.
Okay.
It's a kind of a late September, early October deal. And then, in some places there, I mean, and then you'll have, you know, 28 to 30 days later, it happens again. So,
right.
And it actually, the spot I killed that buck at in Georgia, the third rut, I had some buddies that were hunting a quota, and they ended up killing bucks. They were chasing does, and it was exactly, you know, it was like the third rut. You know what I mean? Those yearling does were coming in to eat. And once you figure that out, it's. I mean, it's deer biology. It's not an if. It's going to happen. If they don't get bred, they're going to come back in. So,
right.
That's something to keep in mind when you're planning it out. You know, you see does. Or you see does being chased, you can kind of bet on that happening again 28, 30 days later.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Was there any like terrain differences or anything like that that you've noticed?
It's pretty much all, you know, pine plantation type deals. Whether it is timber company property that the state's letting, you know, Rayonier or whoever manage or the state purchased it, it's all pretty much timberland with some scattered some of the places are close to the coast, so you got salt marsh that comes in there, which that's, you know, they'll bed out on the edge of that, so that changes things a little bit. But for the most part, it's pretty much all flooded creek bottoms, with the majority of it being pines, and culberries, a few palmetto flats here and there.
Okay. Nice. So with your in-season scouting, if you're looking basically for hot sign, maybe with, and maybe relation to feed trees, rut activity, all of that stuff kind of mixed together?
Yeah. And when I'm looking, or when I'm going to find the sign, it's relative to where it's at. You know, you might find killer scrapes and rubs, but if it's somewhere that people are always walking through, or it's easy access, or wide open, no cover, you know, you can get lucky and kill deer there, but chances are that's all nighttime sign. And I think a lot of people are getting better at, you know, realizing that. But if I'm finding something like that, as far as rubs or hot feed tree, there was one spot last year I wasn't able to go hunt it. I hung a camera there, and it was exactly what I thought was happening. But it was South Georgia, and it was just palmetto glade. I don't know how to describe it, but super, super thick palmettos. And they had these little trails going through it. Well, there were some oaks, and those oaks were dropping. And I was walking down these trails, and you couldn't, you know, I would have had to been right on top of them to kill these deer, but they were just loaded with deer droppings. And that's something that I'm looking for probably more than anything. Like if there's a lot of deer droppings there, they're spending some time there. So that gets me fired up probably more than seeing a scrape, honestly, because, right. I mean, that is the destination if you're seeing, you know, multitude of droppings, or at least a you know, pretty hot secondary source on the way to the primary.
Yeah.
In some places, like, you know, there's not a lot of ag around here. So there may not be any primary food source. They deer browsers, so they just may have a browse loop every night, or they head to a clear cut. But a lot of these deer, there's just not a really heavy primary food source, especially if the acorns aren't dropping yet, or they've already dropped and they're done, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, but, for sure. I seem to find that a lot down here, especially you got years where there's acorns are scattered. They're not really great or anything. And just seems like you kind of mentioned before, is like you've got kind of like these nomadic deer that just kind of roam the area. There's no really rhyme or reason to like they're going to be funneling through here today, or they've been funneling through here for the last week, or anything like that. So that's why it kind of always seems a little bit more difficult, especially in-season scouting and stuff like that, as you're like, okay, cool, or they were here today, or you can find it. Because I've found trails that's like, man, this is a beat down trail, and then put a camera or something up on it, and there might be like one deer use that trail in 2 weeks or something.
Yeah.
it's crazy how that you're just like, man, these, but then you walk another 50 to 100 yards and there's another trail paralleling it that looks beat down too. And you're like, okay, well, I don't know why they're picking these certain trails these days versus that days or what. I could never really correlate it to anything other than maybe they just decided to bed closer to that trail today or something. And that's why they used it.
Yeah, and you see that a lot, like creek crossings, the mud holds tracks well, so you might have a doe and a yearling coming through there every day,
right?
And you see it, you know, there's been 5 days of no rain, you're like, holy crap, this thing is beat down. And it's just one group of does using it,
right?
That fooled me a lot. Like, I started hunting Kentucky this past year, and that is very deceiving up there. You have a group of five does that comes through every day, and that's it, but it looks like every deer in the world's using it.
Oh yeah. Yep. I've seen that. Or like tracks on a road or something. Same thing where they're or crossing or something. And you're just like, oh man, there's a ton of deer crossing right here. And it's like I said, it's the same group of five or six does that are crossing it like twice a day, back and forth, and plenty of tracks. So yeah, I've always found that to be like one of those tricky things, especially down here.
Yeah. Another thing I kind of look for, you hear anybody listen to the podcast, they know like people talk about saddles in hill country.
Uh-huh.
We obviously don't have that.
Right.
But to me, if you can find some kind of pinch point, sometimes it's obvious, sometimes it's not, but like in these places where there's a lot of palmettos, for instance, sometimes you'll have a break in them, and it's just a deer's not, if he can walk through that, they're gonna do it, you know, rather than walking through the other stuff and making tons of noise. Actually find a spot like that last year, I'm pretty pumped about hunting. Hung a camera on it, 100 at once, you know.
Right.
Probably the wrong wind, I didn't see anything, but I hung a camera there and went back and got it 2 months later after the season, and it was almost every single day I had bucks coming through in the daylight, and then you could see certain periods the doe would come through, and there was one day I had 6 different bucks come through that little pinch.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was a doe in the area. But the stuff like that, if you know, we may not have saddles to focus on, but if you can find something like that, to me, that's our version of a saddle down here.
Right.
Or and that gets me. Yeah. Funnel, natural funnel, whether it's palmettos or, you know, steep creek bank, or we don't have a lot of that, but some places they'll have these big cut banks in the river. But that gets me excited too.
Yeah. Yeah. I always find even when I'm like e-scouting or something, I'm always kind of like looking for different features that kind of come together, where you got a swamp next to some planted pines, maybe some hardwoods mixed in, and I'll mark those places on the Onyx or whatever mapping feature I'm using, and go in there, and then a lot of times that's where you'll find rubs, scrapes, things like that, and where like all those kind of pinch down together, I'll notice there's a lot of deer activity as well.
Yeah. Kind of our version of what they talk about, a thermal hub, spokes on the wheel.
Right.
We might not have that necessarily, but you got different terrain types coming together, and that's about as good as you can get. So.
Yeah. Just maybe more diversity in that particular area where they all kind of come together.
Yeah.
I know deer, like I said, they like diversity, and especially with their food habits and everything else, they're just not focusing on one food source at one time. They're still going to browse. They're still going to get the green stuff and all that other stuff while they're eating acorns and stuff like that. Especially down here, I mean, it's always green, so there's always something for them to pick at.
Yeah,
got plenty of greenbrier and everything else around that they like to hit.
Yeah, and transitions are, like you said, different, you know, types of terrain coming together. Transitions are a great place to start. And I was talking about earlier, first come to a new WMA, that's one of the things I'm doing, looking for those good areas that I suspect that will be good. I'm just walking, I'll walk the whole transition.
Right.
Whether it be pines to swamp or, you know, fire break around or whatever. If you walk that fire break around, you're going to see, you know, if you're using the block, they're not just going to stay in that block or stay in that creek bottom or whatever it is, cypress pond. They're going to be coming in and out, so you can see those. Not only see the main trails coming in and out, but see how many deer are using it, especially after rain. But yeah, transitions are a great place to start.
Yeah. And I like those. I found one the other day, but it's this area where you've got planted pines. I mean, they're probably 10 years old or something, super thick inside them. You can tell that's those are bedding areas for sure. You have like this strip that kind of goes in between the two sections that's kind of open. It's swamp, some hardwoods, stuff like that. And you just know at some point during the rut that bucks are going to be using that to go in between those bedding areas, back and forth, checking for does.
Oh yeah. And like right now, preseason, postseason, you can still see the scrapes, but right now you're probably not going to be able to see the scrape on the ground.
Right.
But I've started looking the last few years, you can see the licking branches, especially like historical ones. And actually found one the other day that I didn't notice before. I wanted to hang a camera there because it was a creek crossing and also a transition edge. There's like a trail intersection. Well, I went to hang the camera and I was like, oh, there's a mangled up licking branch here. You know, an old scrape. I didn't even notice it before because it wasn't in season when I found it.
Right.
It's not in season now either, but I noticed the branch and hung my camera on it, sure enough. No bucks yet, but every doe that's come through there, it's a cell cam, so every doe that's come through there, they stop at that branch and just kind of check it out. But
okay.
I know for a fact, whenever they start rutting, that's a, you know, it's going to be a pretty heavy buck activity corridor.
Right. Oh, yeah. Well, you mentioned cameras several times. So why don't we talk about trail cameras and public land and setting those up? Because I know a lot of guys kind of struggle to be like, where should I hang my camera? Like, what should I focus on to hang my camera? Or, and like we've mentioned before, is like some areas are just hot for a small amount of time. And you're,
yeah,
maybe you're putting that camera up to just catch that activity, and you're not really worried about, oh, I'm not getting deer through here every day or once a week or anything like that. So what's your trail cam strategy?
Okay. Well, I get kind of two different strategies that I like to use, but the one I did most of the year last year was, like I said, I picked a certain WMA, a couple of them that I want to focus on, but one really, I put all my cameras in there. And I just did a long soak. I hunted it a couple of times, but I put five cameras out and I left them, and I put them in those kind of funnel type spots, or what I suspected to be funnel type spots. Out of the five, two were busts. I was wrong.
And
the
right.
the other three, they were killer, and I wish I would hunt them, but I didn't. But now I know, okay, these 3 or 4 days I had four different bucks come through. And then hardly anything but does and smaller bucks. And then 30 days later, whatever, I had another flurry of buck activity. And things like that may vary a little bit to the next from year to year, but it's going to be pretty close, I think.
Yep.
I like that. I like the long soak deal. Even if you hunt it, just leave it. You know, pull the card, swap them out, and leave it there. And then the other one, I had some success with a couple years ago. I didn't hunt private last year, but two years ago, I was in a lease, and I wanted to try to backtrack bucks, try to find where they were bedding at, and it worked out for me. But I was just basically moving those cameras. I had a pile of cheap Tascos, and I was kind of leapfrogging them, and I was able to identify at least close enough to where they were, this couple bucks were bedding, and that can work. But it can be frustrating because
right.
if you're really trying to do that leapfrogging them, it's time consuming and you're getting your scent in there, and it worked out for me. But you know, depending on how your deer act, it may not be beneficial. It may be counterproductive because a lot of times you get one picture of them and they smell where you've been, and you know that's it. But that's okay if you're leapfrogging them because you're about to move it anyways. But
right.
But I'll hang them. I'm looking for, like I said, the old licking branches. The only thing about doing that now is you got to kind of resign yourself to the fact that you're not going to get buck pictures right now. Most likely, you're setting the trap for later. You're leaving it and come back and check it and find out when those bucks are using those scrapes and stuff like that. Persimmon trees, if you can find a persimmon tree or a white oak or a water oak hammock or something like that, that you know you can go in there now and look with binoculars and see that it's loaded down. You hang a camera in there and just kind of set that trap for later for when it starts dropping. You go in there and hunt it, and like, okay, there's deer coming through, or there's not, or there's a buck I want to go after, or there's not. I love hanging cameras on persimmon trees.
Right.
If you can find them.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's kind of my two main strategies. And I like the long soak so much. I got 8 or 9. Yeah. I think 9 out now and 1 cell cam. And I plan to get a couple more cell cameras, for the season to use in season, just to see if they actually help or not, or if they make me less productive because I'm too worried about what's going on with them.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, I plan to use the information I learned last year from those long soaks and put the cameras out in different pinches and different licking branches and transitions and stuff like that. That way I can get information for more areas, kind of building on knowledge from last year and also adding to it.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the historical data. 'Cause like you said, you can have, if you leave it there for the season and you had bucks showing up, like you mentioned earlier, like, oh, this funnel or whatever was good for like 3 days, 3 or 4 days this time, and then 3 or 4 days the next time, then theoretically you can go back in there and there's a good chance that it's going to be the same the next year. Mm-hmm. I've noticed that with some bucks is that historically they'll, or at least, and maybe not even rut, it's like they're not there. Like you mentioned, this time of year, no bucks. And then bam, all of a sudden they show up like whatever, October 15th, and they'll be around for a while. And they kind of run. It seems like some of them, like we mentioned, they'll be there for a day or something. Like you might catch them a day, and then a week or 10 days later, they might pop through and you're catching them on camera again. But there's really no like specific, okay, yeah, they're there just this time. It's just they kind of show up like every maybe 7 to 10 days or something. They might show up on camera. And I don't know if that's just that's their core area, and you just happen to catch them on camera that particular day. And not other days, maybe they're just kind of skirting around the camera, because cameras will tell a story. They don't tell the whole story.
Exactly.
For sure. Especially on these big pieces of public where you got a camera and you're just like, oh, I hadn't had anything crossed. Nothing's on camera. But then whatever. It could have been bucks using 50 yards away for a week or something. And you wouldn't have known it.
Yeah, absolutely. They can definitely hurt you if you completely depend on that information. But
that's another
reason I like the long soak, because I'm going off of what I'm seeing and how I feel about what I'm seeing versus, oh man, you know, this spot looks great, it should be great, but I don't have a buck on camera.
Yeah,
well, you like you said, they could be skirting around it.
Yeah, you could be skirting around it, and then you whatever, you go scout. You could do a 100-yard loop around your camera and then go, oh, man, there's a ton of rubs right over here.
Yeah.
And the camera, I just missed my spot for the camera.
So. And I think that's part of the reason of, it gets hot certain times is because that the more mature bucks, the ones you're after, are probably not going to use that same heavy pinch or same trail that all the rest of the deer are using.
Right.
Until they're chasing does. So the rest of the time, you may be able to see him from that area, but you're not getting a picture of him because he's on a very hard to identify trail just off that main one.
Yeah. And some of those big bucks, they just seem to want to be loners anyways. So they do, they know where the does are when the time's right, but they may not even be anywhere near that area. otherwise, they just wait to come in. Whatever. They're like, now it's time. I need to go in there.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it is for Florida, it's like the competition's just not there for as many does as there are, at least in my areas.
It's like that's a big buck. Right.
He's not going to have to fight deer off or anything. There's so many does. There's like, all right, yep, I'm going to go in here and get one, and then I'm going to take her off, and then there'll be other ones in there for everybody else. But at least until, like you mentioned, maybe that second or third rut where there's not as many does. I feel like I've caught more like big bucks during that time where they actually have to get out and move around a little bit and are chasing does more, as opposed to like earlier season when it's like, oh, I'm seeing all these small bucks chasing. Where are all the big bucks at? Well, big bucks have already got their does pinned down.
Because
they know when the does are ready. They'll let all the little ones chase them around and then they'll get in there. It seems like.
Yeah. And that's something to keep in mind. You know, I made this mistake a couple years ago, not a mistake. I don't regret it. I had a great time, but I killed a 6-point chasing a doe, and I'm standing over him, and a bigger buck, an 8-point, chases the same doe back by me. And I ended up, I was lucky. I was able to kill both of them.
Oh, wow.
But, you may have, you hear people, these guys in the Midwest talk about buck trains. It's just buck after buck after buck.
Right.
And it's usually the ones that are kind of hanging back. They know the deal and they know she's not ready to stop yet.
Right.
So they're kind of letting those young bucks get tired out. When the time gets right, he's going to move in and take care of business. But
yeah, for sure. I've seen that before, where you've got more than one buck or whatever. There's three or four, like, chasing this same doe.
Yeah.
Have you used cell cams before, or is this the first year using a cell cam?
No, this is my first year.
Okay.
I'm excited about it. I think they're going to be a good tool. I think they could be deadly in certain people's hands.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
More than others. But I feel like it's one of those things. They're probably going to get, outlawed in a lot of states before it's over with. But in the meantime, let me see if I can
right.
make it work for me, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's I know, especially for, like, private parcels and stuff, it can really be deadly for private land, or especially if you're close to the private land. Because, I've heard numerous cases of people like, oh, there's a buck on my cell cam. They can walk out their back door and get on the other side of where the deer was and shoot them or something 10 minutes
right.
later. I can definitely.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's probably why they're wanting to outlaw them. Is the as of how deadly they can be in certain places or whatnot.
Right.
But my thing is like I've kind of mentioned before, is that that's no different than if I'm hunting a piece of private and there's somebody that goes, hey, man, there's a huge deer over here. They call you and you go out and shoot the deer too. I mean, it's kind of like, well.
Yeah, I mean, it's why not capitalize? We've all got limited time. Why not try to put the odds in your favor as much as possible?
Right. Well, what's your strategy with it? Are you going to just use it for just like MRI, like most recent information, and move it around? Or how are you going to use that cell cam?
Yeah. Right now I've got it in a spot where I'm last year it's a late September rut. So just kind of monitoring stuff right now. But like I said, I plan to get a couple more. So I've got one spot that's really hard to get to. And I don't want to, there's a lot of does there. But I don't want to go back in there to kill a doe and drag it out. You know what I mean? Pack it out or whatever. I want to go back there for a buck. So that's using it for spots like that, just to kind of see when the bucks start showing up. And then also, like you said, MRI. If I find a hot pea tree or a killer looking scrape or just a creek crossing, like plan on using it when I go to Kentucky, putting it out while I'm there.
Okay.
It may not do anything for me, but if there's I find a killer creek crossing and I hunt it one evening, I put the camera out there, I can know, like, okay, it is just five does, or there's a 160 walking through here. That'll definitely change how I'm doing my strategy for the rest of the week. But
yeah, it could definitely be helpful. I definitely see it helpful being like those 5-6 day hunts you go on, like you're talking about, whatever, going to Kentucky, or I'm planning on going to Missouri this year during the rut. And like I said, you find a hot scrape or something like that, and you can put it on there in a certain area and be like, okay, cool. My buddy, he did the same thing. He went up there and put him on some scrapes. And through that intel, it was like just a bunch of like 2-year-olds that were hitting that scrape at the time.
Right.
So he's just like, okay, well, I'll focus on some of these other areas as opposed to over here. I don't necessarily know there's a big buck in this area, but I know there's a ton of 2.5-year-olds in that area. Keep moving it around if you need to, because you might see a buck with a doe on that camera. Yeah. And you can go, okay, well, they're probably bedded close by. Get in there, and if you're hunting during the rut, early season,
right,
like you said, you can eliminate areas.
Yeah, and there's ag, so there's some ag fields up there, and for symmetries and stuff like that. I'm going a little bit different tag. We went opening week last year. We're going a little bit later because it's that velvet crowd is a lot of people. But
I imagine.
But just kind of see how it differs and see if I can nail down what food sources they're using while we're there, because there's a lot more options than there are down here.
Right.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to them to see how they work for me. And as far as people, questioning if they're ethical or not, it's, I don't know. You just do whatever you think is right. I don't see a problem with it as long as it's legal.
Yep.
I'm sure everybody's had somebody tell them there's a big buck in an area, like you said, and you go hunt it because somebody told you. It's no different than that.
Right. Oh, yeah. And there's people that, whatever, think it's not ethical to hunt with a rifle or a compound bow. I mean, so there's people on all sides of the fence to me. And, like, if it's legal, then by all means do it.
Yeah, do whatever you want to do and, you know, celebrate when other people are successful doing it how they want to do it. So
yeah, and to me, if it helps out the guy or girl or whatever that doesn't have a lot of time to scout or hunt, but they can go put a cell cam out and it makes them more successful, then I'm all about it.
Oh yeah. So. Yeah, that's why I enjoy the podcast and talking. Like, ate up with it just like I was when I was 16 and 17, except I didn't have anybody to talk to about it.
Right.
And even now, and you know, like we were talking about before, I know a lot of guys that hunt, but a lot of them are just they're not into it like we are. And
yeah,
I've only got one or two friends that I can talk to about it on a high level. And podcast, it's like all my imaginary friends I get to talk to.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. Well, and like I said, some people, they just don't have the schedules for it. I mean, you and I have good schedules. So
yeah,
we can hunt more and avoid the crowds more and things like that. So it's just everybody has their own little hunting journey. And some people like to go out when it's only when it's cold outside or it's comfortable and things like that. And that's great. And then you got guys that it don't matter what the temperature is or what time of year it is, they're going to be out in the woods. So
yeah,
it's everybody has their thing. I mean, the more hunters we have, the better, because that means absolutely. It's going to stay around, as opposed to people getting out of it. So I always welcome people to get into hunting, no matter what their situation is or and how they want to do it. If it's legal, then by all means do it. If you want to use a crossbow, use a crossbow. When you sell cams, use cell cams. It don't bother me.
Oh, for sure. I used to be, you know. Crossbows or terror, you know, anti-crossbow guy, traditionalist, all that crap. And I had, you know, got divorced a couple years ago and had a financial situation where I had a crossbow and I didn't have a compound at the time, so I hunted with a crossbow.
Right.
And you know, I had just as much fun. I went back to the compound because I don't care what anybody says, it's definitely easier with a crossbow, especially right. if you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
But it is what it is, you know.
Yep.
You got limited time and you got kids and you can only hunt the weekends. I would have as many cell cams as I could afford to run. And
yeah, exactly.
Use the most effective method of killing the animal as I could.
Yeah, yeah. Them cameras are hunting 24/7, 365.
That's
out
right.
there for you, getting intel. And like I said, a lot of it's good for next year. And that's what's good about them. Or at least what I've found is like, maybe I don't need to focus on like the right now. Maybe this is a long-term thing. Like, okay, I know this last couple of years that this has been a hot spot. August 5th or October 5th through October 16th. So I'm going to be in there if the conditions are right. I'm going to be in there during those times. And it helps you kind of because there's certain – I mean, I hunt areas that are kind of far, a little bit of distance from each other, and the ruts seem to be different. So you can just be like, all right, I'm focusing on this area this time. I'll leave this area alone, and then I'll focus on that area. So there's all kinds of different ways you can approach it. And I think they can also help you with your time management and everything else.
Yeah. And don't, you know, in my opinion, I don't like to rest on my laurels and like, okay, I found five killer spots. I'm going to keep on wearing them out. You know, I want to like, okay, these spots are good. I'm going to move the cameras because right. I know these spots are good during these times. So now I'm going to build on that knowledge.
Yep.
Because you never know what's going to happen. They're going to cut timber or some guy's going to start hunting it all the time or, you know, whatever.
Oh, yeah. Yep. There's definitely areas where I'll hunt archery, but I know that, like the last week of archery, there's going to be people in there putting their stands up for muzzleloader and things like that. So
yeah,
I kind of move on from them areas after that. But yeah, it's always good to have as many options as possible just in case that happens. 'Cause I've shown up like the day before, or I've shown up, scouted areas, and then show up, and then they're in there cutting, like literally like a couple of days before season or something like that. And you're like, well, that area is done for.
that'll ruin your day for sure.
Or at least a little, like, oh, I had all these bucks on camera.
Yeah.
But you just got to move on and find somewhere else and use all that scouting that you did and move on to somewhere else. Well, you mentioned before the podcast that you were one of the lucky ones this year, and you drew three different quota hunts for this year. Is that right?
I did. Yes, sir.
Three different ones. Are they archery, muzzleloader, and rifle, or are they all archery? Actually, what are they?
I got archery, muzzleloader, and a rifle one, and then I actually picked up, I don't know if I'm going to go to it, but it was one of the leftovers. I picked up an extra rifle one.
Oh, wow.
Really late season. Somewhere else I've never been to before, so I might do that, might not, might return it, but either way, I got three good ones that I wanted to get, so I'm excited about that.
Yeah exactly. That's good news. I've yet to get any quota hunts or reissues or anything. I still put in for them every week knowing I'm gonna get unsuccessful. But
yeah,
still gotta put in for them. Do you have history with these quotas, or I'm assuming you might have some history with them?
Yeah, two of them I have a lot of history with. I'm still going to get some cameras out in kind of the areas that I'm planning on focusing on, but the other one is new. I've got some information on it from some other people, and I've scouted it. I've never hunted it. I've scouted it five or six times though, and you know, it's something I've wanted to tackle. There's something. Yeah, I like hunting new places, and honestly, I'll probably scout it a few more times, but I don't think I'm going to hang any cameras in there. I think I'm just going to go scout my way in and kind of go from there.
Awesome. Well, do you have any predictions for this year?
Listen to y'all's predictions. I don't know if I'm going to be as lofty as...
Those were bold predictions.
Yeah.
So those are ones that you're like, that's probably never going to happen, but I'm going to throw it out there anyways. But
The first one is one that I've had pretty much every year. I want to kill a registry buck in Florida. I haven't done that yet.
Okay.
And I have, if they're still alive, two different Florida WAs. I got two different registry bucks. I had them on camera last year, and I think they're both still alive.
Okay.
So, one of them is... I think I got a killer setup, but I'm sure I'll go in there and get embarrassed. But
right.
So that's number one. And then I tried to go hunt with purely just my bow last year, and I killed three on my bow, but I ended up killing that last Florida buck with the rifle at the end there. But I'd like to kill a handful of deer on my bow. Say probably between the three states, I'd like to kill five, and I'd like to kill a buck in every state.
Okay, so you've got Florida, Georgia, and Kentucky.
Yep, and Kentucky, the Midwest has got my number. I've been to Illinois and Kentucky a few times, and I haven't killed a buck up there at all yet. I've come close several times. I drew back. I missed one off the ground last year. That was a rush. Love to kill one off the ground, but just didn't either. They were had them in range and they were just not what I wanted to shoot, or that one on the ground, he came in direction I wasn't expecting, and I tried to shoot through some CRP and ended up missing them. But
okay.
Nice. Yeah, I really pretty much the goal pretty basic, kill a buck in every state.
yeah every state.
I'm an opportunist, though. I want to kill a registry buck in Florida, but if those big boys aren't showing up, then...
Oh, yeah. Yep.
I'll be Florida legal.
Yeah, exactly. Well, like I said, they're registry for a reason.
Exactly.
They've got that age, so generally pretty smart. And the opportunity... And to me, there's just not that many running around out there.
No.
So it's not something that you're like, oh yeah, there's in the Midwest where there might be, you might see whatever 10 130s in a day or something like that.
Right.
A little bit different down here where you're going to see a bunch of 80, 80 to 90 inch bucks probably.
Oh yeah.
But the hitting that 100 mark is definitely it's definitely a challenge. I know quite a few people that are trying to hit that registry mark. For sure. They want to kill a registry buck. So, and it'll happen eventually. So that's what I tell all of them. I'm like, eventually it's going to happen. It'll be when you least expect it too.
Yeah.
More than likely.
I killed my oldest Florida buck 2 years ago. He was at least four.
Right.
I had several people look at the job on, including myself. And, he didn't even break 100. So,
right. Oh yeah.
He was like right at 90. I was like, dang.
Yeah, there's definitely some bigger, I've killed some bigger bodied, just real big bodied Florida bucks that they said they might go 90 inches. They just don't have the genetics to get there. Never had. So, and then there's some young ones. My buddy killed a real young one last year. He was a 13 point. Looking at his body and everything, you would have thought he was like a 2.5 year old, maybe a 3.5 year old at the most.
Wow.
He was a one. I think he scored like 120. But yeah, so he just had the genetics.
Yeah.
And you're like, whoa, this deer made it another year. My goodness. He probably would have been just been a absolute monster, but you ain't passing on that in Florida, 13 point.
Yeah.
In the state of Florida at all. But yeah, so well, those are good goals, man. Good goals. I think you can accomplish it. Like I said, you got to get over that that Kentucky thing. I would like to see you kill something in Kentucky for sure.
Yeah, me too.
is this your third year going out there?
No, it's my second, but I went twice last year.
Okay,
I didn't go during the rut, but I have basically three weeks allotted for it this year.
Oh boy!
If I tag out early, obviously probably won't go back, but
right,
yeah, I went twice last year. I knew I was gonna go at least twice last year no matter what, even if I killed the first trip, that way I could keep learning. But I ended up not seeing a shooter buck until the fourth day on the second trip.
Okay.
And then I take that back, I saw a couple out of range, but I didn't have one in range till then. But
right,
yeah, it's you get there and it's like, this is gonna be easy, there's deer everywhere.
Right.
But then it's public land, so you know, you still got to find that higher end buck.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Well, you got any other final thoughts for anybody? We're fixing to be, well, in our area, season's coming up in almost a month. I know they've been hard at it in South Florida already. I've already seen quite a few bucks in Zone A drop so far this year.
I know. I'm jealous. I'm not jealous of the heat. I went down there and tried that last year and got, you know, I got on deer, but no bucks.
Right.
It's rough.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's what I keep hearing. Like, don't you want to come hunt South Florida? I'm like, eh.
Yeah. No, just to, you know, get it. If you can get out now and scout and do it, but don't fret too much. You know what I mean? Because they're still going to shift yet.
Yep.
What I've seen in my past experience. So and then get your setup dialed in. Got my bow setup dialed in, probably more confident with that than I've ever been. But now's the time to get all that stuff sorted out, because it's, I mean, we're knocking on the door for us, North Florida.
Okay. Yep, we are. Well, good. So, well, if you'll hang on 1 second, I'll close the podcast out. Well, everybody, I hope you enjoyed this second podcast with Ricky. If it's done anything, I hope it's at least inspired you to get outside and enjoy the great outdoors.